State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us for our first August 2026 Tacky Talk. Hey, Tacky, how are you?
Hey Joe, happy end of summer to everyone. As we reaching the final month of hopefully the last of the hottest months this year we've had.
I know, it's talking about another heat wave, though, later this week, so it's not over just yet.
Well, I actually need to get to my lawn. It finally started raining, and I'm like, it's going to be like 90 degrees humidity this weekend. I'd rather try to trim this thing when I'm not, going to have a stroke outside.
Exactly. But as I always like to say, you don't have to shovel sunshine and heat.
Well, that is fair. A tall grass is a lawnmower and a weed whacker and can get through most of it. However, I still have leftover tree from the damage in May that I still have to deal with. I managed to get a chunk of it done on the first really cool day we had in July, but I'm running behind on removing the rest of the debris around the house. And obviously, when September hits, I would like to, do a little bit more wood fire pit therapy, as I like to call it, at some point. But wood splitting and getting it dried out, and enjoy the fire pit a little more before it gets too cold. But yeah, I mean, I'm like a lot of folks around here who obviously we have jobs and it keeps us busy, and they try to do stuff around the house. And you're aware that I have a lot of personal life issues. I'm still, wrangling my way through. So. It's just a lot going on at once. But at the same time, the session did close on the 31st. Fairly quiet. We actually finished before midnight, somewhat unusual for us. However, we have a creation of a number of different conference committees that will hold us on call through the fall into the winter. So just a quick review for everyone, the rules here. So conference committee can form anytime, actually. When two bills are in disagreement between the House and the Senate, it's a three-person on each branch, so six people total, of which two are the majority party of each side and one is minority party of each side. The way the rules are set up, when the conference committee report is filed, it can be taken up exactly 24 hours to the next day. If it's filed before 8 p.m., if it's filed after 8 p.m., you would have to take it up actually the day after, so essentially 72 hours. The rules can be suspended by unanimous consent on these things. However, a conference committee report is supposed to be accepted by roll call, and it's supposed because it depends on whether they can suspend rules. We have a lot of head scratching around those of us who are rules nerds, because we've never seen this before in this current format. So, if we get a conference report filed, let's say 8 p.m. on September 15th. That means, well, 7:59, September 15th, that means we get to vote on September 16th at 7:59 p.m. The good question is, are they going to call us in at like 9 p.m. the day before, or
Right.
they're going to try to schedule a future date certain to give everyone a chance to kind of figure out their schedules.
Oh, so it has to be in-person roll call?
In the House, it is. We're still in the House. It's in-person voting. In the Senate, it is not in-person. Senate is still operating remotely, so they actually have a lot easier than we do. The House members have to return from wherever they are to the House if they can. It may be impractical if you're too far away. For example,
Right.
or let's say your plane flight is 10 hours out and trying to get back next day for a vote. That's just not going to happen.
Right.
Even if it's, let's say, a 9 p.m. notice for a 1 p.m. start, maybe if you're coming out of Florida, you take like the 7 a.m., you probably could get back in time by midday, Logan directly to Boston.
Yeah.
But then again, you won't have your suit, so you have a dress code violation problem.
Oh, okay.
The House does allow remote voting if a legit medical emergency, meaning that, let's say, you're getting cancer treatment, or you're having major surgery, or you have a contagious disease. The doctor can confirm that you really don't want to give to other people. And
Oh, interesting.
we have a whole thing about getting sick in the chamber right now. Nobody wants to get sick. So,
Sure. Interesting. Okay. And I guess the biggest one in conference is the economic development bill, right?
yeah, it's economic development bill. It's about 550 billion, million bonds. So it's a very small bond, or 550 million, relatively speaking, of which 150 million is a reauthorization. So it's like an old bond being brought back to life. For a little bit. And we have the environmental bond bill, which is substantially bigger. That's in conference committee. So there's at least eight outstanding conference committee, including the ballot question committee, campaign finance reform, disclosure transparency. We have a couple of other transparency bills out there on public records. That's in conference committee. We have this weird retirement teachers. It's complicated. Short answer is it allows teachers who did not take advantage of the 14% contribution acceleration, means they have to contribute 14%, I think, to the system. Was it 12 plus 2? It's weird math. The short of it is they pay more to get out earlier in the retirement program. They missed the boat in the past and just get some back in. And there's some
Oh.
controversy about when that actually begins. A very narrow group of people, and most people don't have to worry about it.
Right.
Basically, it's a contrib we have a contributory pension system. We pay 100% of it. Contrary to other people believe it is 100% because I've seen how much money the state treasurer has. I want my money back into pension someday because I like to stay at the point of my life because it'd be taking 30 plus years out of me at 10% rate. So yeah, you guys can figure out how
Yep,
come I want
yeah.
my pension money back at this point.
Oh yeah, it's like the rest of us who want our Social Security that's due to us.
Yeah, once you see how much money they've taken out of you, and particularly when it hit this age of your life, it's like, whoa. Yeah, that's a lot
Exactly.
of
Yeah.
money. And then we and then I think it's another couple of smaller minor conference committees floating out here too on some smaller bills. So, we could be looking maybe, 8 plus conference committee reports coming up this fall. Well, maybe we get lucky and like a handful show up at the same time and we do it in one day, or we can get unlucky and be spread it around and all of us are jumping around no notice. And I don't have a family, but those who do, this can create all kinds of discontent. If you're on vacation with the family and you get a call.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's, you're on the beach and all of a sudden it's time to come back.
Well, as I like to say, you only get one family, mostly. But the legislature is a job, and you can't you can you can you know you get pick and choose. You watch your family mad at you, or your voters mad at you. It's like you can't win either way.
Right. Is that follow through for home rule petitions too? Is that, that do they go to conference or what happens with those?
Home rule petitions generally do not go to conference.
Oh.
Welcome to one of the controversies we have in the place, because I obviously see alcohol liquor licenses. And we have a specific house policy regarding retaining license retention value for remaining licenses. Might as well guarantee all licenses must be issued. Few communities are exception. Boston's kind of a special case, but we want to ensure that all licenses are issued so it doesn't affect remaining license valuations. Contrary to popular belief, there is always a minute or modest, depending on community and valuation, change as a result of additional licenses. It is very, very, generally very small, but depending on where we're in the economy, it may be large. That's the problem. Market value licenses is market value driven. So, depending on who you talk to, determines that. And House and Senate has been disagreeing on those home petitions, and I've been trying to hold a line on maintaining the House policy, to protect, all licensees, not just benefit one.
Yep, I
And
understand.
that's kind of my position as the House Chair. You may be listening as a particularly restaurant owner. I know that retail, we get some retail, but restaurants predominate. I don't think you've all been realizing I've been trying to protect your license valuation statewide since I first got into this chairmanship. I do my best to try to keep that valuation from declining. And if we do hit a major recession, which who knows at this stage, those va license valuations decline because restaurants will start going away, including those that accept home petitions. That's why we actually have provision in the House that if it's a license unused for 3 years at a location, because most of them are tied to location, it evaporates, it goes away,
Okay. Yep.
making sure that you had a chance to try to make sure maximum usage, and if it doesn't happen, you shouldn't have one lingering. Economic development's different because economic development is part of a zone that is part of a long-term planning for a community. That's like Quincy Center.
Yep.
That's an
Yep.
example. So those are kind of an odd case. And even then, my understanding is Quincy Center has not utilized all the licenses that we should do.
I believe that's right. Yes.
So, I mean, there's also a major concern about, what kind of urban planning there is. And your legislative delegation, not me per se as acting as chair, but your own legislative delegations around the state have a right to ask questions to the community, like, what are you guys doing?
For sure. Yeah, it's under state purview. Yeah.
Well, you made your legislators work. The legislature should find some results as a result of their efforts. And I think a municipality sometimes takes advantage of their state legislators, not thinking they have to answer to them at some level, particularly they have to deal with me on trying to get something done. So, I always still believe that state legislators on home rule petitions, should be able to hold the community somewhat accountable, especially something that, could affect the evaluation of restaurants in their community. They may not be constituents, but those are folks that you have a direct impact regarding the biggest and most valuable thing, short of perhaps owning the property.
Sure. Yeah, our retail liquor license is extremely valuable to especially a small establishment. It could be the main source of their profit.
Yeah, some communities could be very small amount of money, let's say 10 grand in small communities, but it could be substantial because of lower cost of doing business.
Right.
Boston is famous, between $450,000 and $650,000. Obviously, that's enormously crazy money. But I mean, it varies from community to community. And you're right, some of these communities are using it to retire on when they close up, and some of them use it for leverage. During COVID, liquor licenses were crucial for these restaurants to be able to get short-term lending with banks during the COVID period, especially to have a good relationship with the bank on lines of credit to try to get them through COVID. So to say that, liquor licenses really have no value, this is a disservice to the restaurant industry, especially during COVID period, to try to get by those obviously in certain circumstances are able to get short-term lines of credit, short-term loans to try to get by. So, I get very frustrated at the Boston Globe, and obviously right now my Senate colleagues, because they want to get rid of the quota system. But the level of insensitivity, because people feel that alcohol equals fun, and we talked about this of a Senate meme of the senators who think having fun mean alcohol being in a car, which I think everyone is aware is a bad idea here. And I saw another article saying that young people don't socialize together because there's no alcohol. That implies inebriation, eco-socialization, not actually talking about the greater challenges that's been created between COVID and the modern technology of how young people interact and how families need to work together on how interaction work and how communications work in a changing world. Not everyone has to do this, but I mean, a person like myself who's in the public eye in some format, is challenged regarding Reddit and memes and all kinds of social media and way too many ways to communicate beyond just email and telephone calls now. And it's overwhelming because the sheer volume of messaging devices is insane. How you communicate and who you communicate with is evolving. It's not a singular thing. And myself is constantly trying to learn this, and it's hard. You may not, for whatever reason. Obviously, most people do not have a job where they engage with a lot of different people with very different communication styles when they want to talk to you, email, or text you, and trying to be sensitive and trying to figure out to, use your words correctly. Most people don't have to do that. I do. So I think if people try to figure out how to communicate with different folks, suddenly it's like learning a new language.
Well, in some ways it is, and you really have to sort out what's truth and what's made up.
I mean, I go online to find out what these words mean. I mean, all these like four letters, and I don't know what they are. I actually have to go online to find out what they are sometimes.
Just ask a 10-year-old tacky.
Yeah, I don't know where they come from. I'm like, what is this? I have to use the Urban Dictionary online to figure out what potentially these letters could mean. Unfortunately, several news media outlets, including those in Europe, have been tracking white nationalists, basically Nazis, utilizing the same thing, certain words and letters, especially just letters, and using ASCII symbols, like the little smiley face of a colon and a like a colon and parentheses to make a smiley face. And there's a lot of these subtle things going on out there in texting and social media that are conveying messages that media, but also law enforcement on a global level is keeping track of.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, we just saw the potential cyber attack, I think, at the Michigan water supply that the FBI was investigating.
Yeah, I think there's at least a half dozen water supplies nationally that's under a cyber attack. It's amazing that these things are still connected to internet. They really should be closed loop at this point,
Yes.
separate component for internet that's not part of the main system. It just shows you the connectivity of the world we live in. And sometimes people forget that connectivity means you have a doorway in and out of your house as a result. When very early now, being ancient, when Comcast first introduced the variation of broadband in the old days, the broadband actually was insecure, and you could actually access other people's printers down the
Yes.
street
Yes.
if you bring up the network. And that shows you the nativity, whatever,
Yep, that's right.
naive nature of people using technology that not fully understands it. I like to think that if you're going to drive a car, you should know about the car before you drive the car. But for some reason, for things like the internet, people just act like, well, it's no different from a landline telephone. It's as a guy does some cybersecurity as part of his committee chair, it's basically a new doorway into your house. Some basic security systems for homes are fine. Because honestly, unless you have like very sensitive information on your computers, which most of us do not, let's be honest about it. Most of the stuff is, financials and things like that. But you have web access to the cloud and just pass keys and double authorizations, things like that. But I mean, sensitive systems like water systems and power systems, that's a little more crucial. And the banks and telecom companies spend insane amount of money for cybersecurity, but you can't expect the same of insane amount of money being spent on crucial infrastructure. So, so one of the smarter things to do is really just close the system off from the internet and have an isolated system, and then you have a separate terminal for the internet, then things don't touch each other.
Right. Yeah, it's an intranet, not internet, right? It's just completely in-house. Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's actually the smarter way to go about it. I'm always surprised that, back in the days of the 70s, this is how they kind of did things. The internet's not totally a new system. I mean, people remember the game War Games with Matthew Broderick. The internet's not new, but there are a lot more closed systems back then. Not just because the internet was new, but also just they knew back then it was more secure.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the economy. Since last we talked, the Fed held interest rates steady.
Not surprising, despite the fact that we're far from the so-called 2% inflation mark, and it's kind of holding steady in the midpoint, 3.5-ish PCE should be right near the same zone. And of course, they're constantly fluctuating oil, and you guys seeing a country conflicting, getting the gas prices is making you all, I think, a little bit crazy, I suspect. I am no longer able to tell you exactly how much gas costs around the state because every time I drive, it's a different number.
It's all over the place, yeah.
Yeah, we've seen well past $4.
Yep.
We've seen under $4.
Yep.
If you're in Boston, well past $5.
It's crazy, yeah.
It is crazy. So it's actually very hard for you when I talk about this because we talk about gas prices every 2 weeks, and what we see at the pump as we do our drives around. Yeah, it's going to be another rough summer, folks. I mean, you're going to do some traveling. It's going to be hard if you're on a non-municipal aggregate electric bill. You're going to find it's going to be some more fluctuations coming up. And if you're on basic service, meaning the utility rate that goes to auction every 6 months, the timing could actually be dreadful because we're closing in on the 6 month review process in September. And if the timing is wrong, the lock-in for that 6 months is going to be brutal for certain folks that are in basic rate utility company. And of course, it's still subject to variable rate on like really hot days when air conditioning's up. So
Right.
the global fuel prices has a direct impact on your electrical prices, over time. Thankfully, Quincy's a municipal aggregated rate. You can still join the municipal aggregate if you're not a municipal aggregate. At home, I've had to change utility bills to my name, and I did not become part of automatic municipal aggregate. I had to sign up for the municipal aggregate, waiting for approval right now.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay.
Yeah, you can. Yep, I had to look it up to sign up because I was looking at my new electric bill and realized that I was on basic rate. And my mom was on municipal aggregate, so
Right.
part of the things I've been doing around
Yeah.
here.
No, that's actually good to know for folks who've had a death in the family to check that.
There's a lot of checking going on at the house right now. As I like to say, it's every day is trying to get a little more done around here. We talked about this before we started to call about all the small things that you didn't have to worry about that you have to now do, especially a lot of these ownership changes that are important ones. I mean, I'm not worried about my Stop and Shop reward card. I'm more very concerned about utility bills and other central things of that type. What I'm saying is that, get ready for some price shocks if you're on basic rate. If you happen to be on a competitive supply, meaning you chose your own electric and locked in for a certain amount of time, maybe you're doing good to be okay through this price shock coming this August, September, October, maybe November, depending on what's going on in the global affairs. And I was reminded from several analysts this week, there's several things not to be considered. One is the China supply issue. China is not exporting any oil. China is a top five oil refiner and pumper in terms of both. They predominantly supply countries nearby to them, which are now starving for oil. As Strait of Hormuz is now closed again, it takes about 3 months to maybe up to 5 months, depending the travel route for oil tankers to get where they're going, including natural gas tankers. So you can imagine you get out and you have to go back in, but you're afraid to go back in because you don't know if you're going to get out. And then you also have the natural gas issue, which I think was in Qatar, which is like 6% of all natural gas that's like 3 years away from being repaired. So you got a lot of these other factors going on, plus the fertilizer problem, which I remind folks that your wintertime groceries could be curiously priced and supply chain restricted depending on which country's fertilizer, including ours, didn't arrive this past growing season. So you got a lot of these unknown factors that may be nothing or maybe something. You just don't know until we get there. That's why I'm always this very hesitation, very concerned. You got to brace for what you don't know. That's going to definitely affect the economy. It's just, I think it's going to trickle through and you're going to see a little here, a little there, and then get upset. I'm going to get upset. Or it could certain areas like maybe wheat isn't affected and bread prices are fairly stable and you're like, okay, we're good there. But you find out that you can't get certain fresh vegetables because there was no fertilizer available in certain countries. So it's a bit of like it's hard to tell because so much of our stuff is so globalized, and it's very tricky. But the lack of China exports has not been fully priced in yet. And that's a big deal. And I remind folks, when you look at the prices of WTI and Brent, that is the wholesale price. That's not the real price. The
That's right.
economic add between 20 plus dollars to that number is the retail price.
Yep, I think this morning it's around $85 a barrel.
Yeah, so the retail price is $105 and up.
Yep. And that's, directly impacts the price of the pump.
Absolutely. Plus, you go heating oil eventually gets to you this winter time. Obviously, natural gas less affected because we're a huge natural gas supplier here, but we'll eventually get to electricity as well as any other petrol product. So, plastic in particular, all plastic in particular, is going to be a real concern. And I don't know if I said this before, but I mean, the Japanese snack companies have now got rid of color packaging. They're going to black and white because a lot of color ink is actually made of petroleum products. So it turns out they've gone to the cheapest option available, which is just black on white, in a way to try to not raise prices.
Oh, interesting. I the first I ever heard of that.
Yeah, you can look it up. It's actually a real problem because Japanese inflation is higher than ours, not by percentage exactly, but because they've had stagflation for so long, they just almost have no movement. So when they had a system shock and really didn't have a lot of wage movement for 25, 30 years, any kind of shock or price increase is really more devastating. Here, we've always had some level of wage inflation go along with inflation. Over there, wage inflation is so slow that the inflation, any kind of inflation increase, really is a shock to everyone and consumers. So people don't, if raises, when you get a raise, is a type of wage, it's type of wage inflation. The goal is that your wage increase should exceed the inflationary rate.
That way, that way you can still afford things.
Yeah, same thing of savings. I mean, the idea is that your savings accounts should have interest rates that exceed inflation, which is not happening. And again, consult your financial planner and do your own research. But you obviously want to find passive income for emergency money, money you need now, that exceeds the rate of inflation, because that way at least your passive money, your safe money is staying ahead of the game. And that is becoming very challenging, because if you look at
Yes.
CD rates and bond rates and high-end savings account, it's they're really barely just beating inflation now. When
Just barely, yeah.
when the Feds increased interest rates in 2022, they weren't beating, but inflation was coming down below a savings rate of 4.5 to 5%. So,
Right.
that was good for people in passive income and emergency money.
Right. Yeah. Now it's like I say, it's just about break even or just barely a little bit above the inflation rate. But then again, we don't really know what the true inflation rate is because the numbers are delayed.
They are delayed a month, so it's always backward looking because none
Right.
of us can predict the future, despite what we all think. None of us can predict the future, and as a result, decision making for all of us is always backward looking, and especially tough for things like the Federal Reserve and government trying to make policy using backward data because we could anticipate. But frankly, anticipation doesn't mean you're right.
That's right.
And
It's
a way.
basically a guess, educated guess, but a guess, yeah.
Yes, and that's why I tell people again, I get this a lot from in my job. People want me to do certain public policies because they think they know what the future looks like.
Right. You can't make policy based on a hunch.
That is correct. That is correct. I mean, and even things like the state budgets based on projections based on
Right.
historical
Yes.
returns in the past.
But those are very
However,
conservative, usually.
usually very conservative,
Yeah.
why we always have a little bit of a surplus. Not always, but often have some kind of little bit of surplus. We're so conservative. But let's say the Persian Gulf War goes into the next level of insanity. The Red Sea's under siege. There's a Ukraine is now attacking, drone attacking ships coming out of Iran, providing weapon supplies to Russia. There is a legit concern from Middle East and Gulf countries as well as Europe. This can go from isolated warfare to a spread, especially if Ukraine decides it really wants to choke off weapon supplies from Iran to Russia, which could result in large retaliations to Iran in a regional level. That could shake up the entire economy, and from a state standpoint, in terms of finances, we can't see that company. And
That's
maybe
right.
income tax goes down a lot, or maybe as a result, sales tax goes down. Like let's say it's close to 25% of sales tax, and suddenly we're in a bit of a crisis.
Yeah, does the new state budget factor in the passage of that ballot question regarding state income tax?
No, and
No.
thankfully that's no longer in the ballot.
Oh, okay.
Supreme Court took that one off the ballot, thankfully. So we, it'll be back in 2 years. But
Okay.
again, we really, we couldn't anticipate. So, we were the rough estimate was over $4 billion and counting if the ballot question passed. A discretionary budget's generally one third of the budget's discretionary. So if you're looking at like a $65 billion budget, one third is like what is it, like $20-ish billion
Yeah.
would take. It would have to come out of that $20 billion, which means that you
Okay.
cut like $16 billion, which means you have to cut $4 billion discretionary. That's everything from the beaches to school breakfast and lunches to public health awareness programs, and you can go on and on and on about state services that you may not realize that you and your family may be receiving because you never think about it until it's gone. Then
Until it's gone, right?
you call me super angry. Then I ask if you voted for the ballot question, and there you go. So then that's why with this whole federal government thing on October 1, which we'll discuss once we get to October 1, and see how much they're going to impact our budget, which is about $16 to $20 billion of our budget is federal reimbursements, of which the vast majority is Medicare, Medicaid, which you got to know is massive.
That's the governor, I think, just this week is calling for an increase in Medicaid spending.
Because we're getting older.
Right.
I
More
mean,
people are needing it, right? Exactly.
yeah, that's just the bottom line. I'm getting older, and people as they age before they get to Medicare, sometimes they lose their job or they come up with disability, and then Medicaid goes on. It's a very wide group of people that use it. It's not like one type of demographic.
Oh, right. No, even young people who may be unemployed, you know, sure.
Yeah, and the end of subsidies for the so-called Obamacare, the AC American Care Act, are now not rolling as much, which means they're going to find themselves in emergency rooms more often, which goes into uncompensated care pool because the state reimburses a hospital a portion of a cost associated with people with no insurance come to emergency rooms.
Right.
Medicaid, Medicare, as well as the ACA is supposed to keep that from happening, or at least there's some way to pay for it. And do preventative care, and actually helps the taxpayers in the long term. Near term, you may think it's not a lot, but in the long scheme of things, it makes a big difference. But at the same time, though, the Trump administration cut $7 million in FEMA money. We talked about this last week,
Yes,
and
yeah.
we got a little more details, of which the Quincy project is the Manette Avenue to Nut Island seawall project, which is over $500,000. So this was committed money from a prior administration that was committed to the city of Quincy, of which the Trump administration just decided not to pay for it. So I'm aware there's a lot of folks out there that are probably blaming Democrats for this cut because that's just easy to do. But as like I say, we don't control the White House, and the person that does has decided to take a $500,000 of over $500,000 of committed, previously committed. This was not just an application for Manette to Nut Island seawall repairs caused by storms in the past.
So does that mean the city has to pay that back, or how does that work now?
Well, it's a reimbursement. So obviously, a wall had to be fixed, but
Okay,
the
so
city,
the city just won't be reimbursed for it.
that's a problem for the city too, because I presume it was some kind of combination of cash and bond, but I can't presume that. I don't know.
Right.
The Healey administration, as well as us, are obviously opposing this change
Yeah.
by the federal government, as well as all the communities around there that are affected, and see if we can get them changed their mind. Otherwise, we're going to wait to another administration to actually honors their word. This is kind of the challenge we're having here, is that people don't think the federal government affects you, particularly at municipal level. And I think the mayor and city council would disagree with that as much as I do, but the federal government does impact. And here's a classic example one. If you call it a FEMA one because it was designated national, a state, a federal emergency storm that caused significant infrastructure damage, you qualify for FEMA money. And now they just took it away. And again, it's a prior commitment made, a promise made, a promise broken.
Right. Yeah, that's money that you wouldn't have budgeted in the city budget because you just assumed that the federal government had already promised it. So now you have to take that back into account.
That's correct. And this is kind of an easy, small example of what we're doing at all governments, not just Massachusetts, but all governments, all municipalities around the country, dealing with a partner that you can't trust.
And what's the federal government going to do with that money?
Who knows? I mean, women, I can't speak for the president's administration of how they operate, because it's very hard to understand what they're doing in some ways. I can speculate, but I can't claim an oversure. I just can rely on institutional knowledge to give you what I think. But it's a lot of observation. But we do know that this administration, would like to cost shift. And I talked about this when he first came in, cost shift as much as they can to all state governments, which means trickles down to county and municipal government as well, things the federal government pays for. And it doesn't matter if it's a social program or bonding or infrastructure project, there is clearly a divestiture of responsibility of a commitment of the federal government to states. And I said this one out last call with you about the power and erosion of federalism and our understanding of responsibilities between the federal government and state government. And like I said, most people won't feel this until they feel it. Or as the council and the mayor and myself, kind of informing the public in this forum, exactly, what the impact is. And everybody, issues are important to them, but as you can tell, it's juggling a lot of important issues.
Well, I mean, put it in perspective, it'd be like if the state took back the money that it promised the city of Quincy to help build the new Squantum School. I think it was somewhere like $40+ million. That would then be on the city.
Well, yes. So for things like school building assistance grant, that's actually built into our main budget. It's a direct cash payment, directly to cities and towns. So, it's one of those things that is what you call off budget. If we didn't make it off budget, it'd be subject to the variable. So let's go back to the income tax example. So if we go to 4% income tax, we wouldn't touch the school building assistance program as a potential cut. One, because it's actually paid from your sales tax, one penny. But also, more importantly, we always can change the law, right? But more importantly, there'll be a huge negative impact on communities reading school building assistance grant because the trickle-down effect on the cost of us breaking that promise would be devastating.
Oh, for sure. No question. Yep. It would make many projects unfeasible.
So it is an example of kind of what we do is off budget because we understand the impact. Debt service is an off-budget issue because we will always pay our bond debt. So we, let's say, lost $4 billion of income tax money, we will not reduce our bond payment of debt. We will continue to pay our debts because the negative impact on the bond ratings too risky. But and again, now I'm putting like school breakfast programs against bond debt, right? It becomes this very kind of position that people haven't seen since the 2003 dot-com bust, as well as the 2008 financial crisis. Before that was the saving and loan scandal, and before that was the end of the Massachusetts miracle. So if you've been around long enough and seen enough of these recessions, one of the hardest things to do in government is to do program cuts, especially when you need those the most, and also try to make sure we have to be responsible regarding our own debt service and understand cost shift impacts of cities and towns. So it's an enviable position in politics that you may find yourself in that position. And we recognize the trickle-down effects, but we also recognize that our core services also have an impact in local communities, and everyone's trying to protect themselves. I respect that. I do. But at the same time though, if we don't do something on, let's say, school breakfasts, the cost shifts back to the city.
That's right. Or ultimately the families, right?
Yeah, the family's impacted. Oh, we don't have the program anymore, the family's impacted. It's an easy visual. That's why I use that example, because it's easy to visualize.
August is upon us, Tacky, and that means the August Moon Festival is coming up.
August 16th, Sunday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Kickoff celebration starts around noontime. The Lion Dance. This is the single largest event in the South Shore throughout the summertime. Should draw about 15,000 people, pending weather. I'll be there for several hours with my paper fans and jar openers, meeting, greeting people, sweating up a storm. I'll probably stay as usual till I run out of stuff or my body gives out. One of the I can go for a while, but I am getting older, contrary to what you all think.
Even though you don't look at Jackie.
It does start to get hot, and I do actually stand there for hours, while sitting for a long period. And I'm very happy to meet people and have a chat, or just take a fan or don't take a fan. I mean, whatever floats your boat. We'll have ice pops for the kids once this gets high. And thank you to my volunteers and folks that helped me out that day. It is the one time I ask for volunteers the most.
Yeah, it's the 39th annual this year. It's again all the whole stretch of Coddington Street basically is a party.
Yeah, we thank the public schools as well as the YMCA and Public Works and Parks Department and Police Department and EMS and everyone else that makes this thing work, including the volunteers and staff of Graduation Resources Inc. So it's a big effort from a lot of folks. To try to make it fun, but so try and make it a reasonable period of time. And I've heard some folks that it seems to get longer, get shorter, it kind of varies from year to year. You have to ask Philip and the guys over there why that time arrows change back and forth. But I'll just say there's a whole lot. Every year is a different year, and I've ran 10 of these when I had less money to run them. And the lack of predictability and what can you afford to do, each year is very different.
Sure. Yeah, it's no admission, so it's free to go and enjoy the entertainment. Just the food is a cost.
Yeah, and you kind of, you walk through, enjoy an entertainment, and when you're done, you move on. That's why it's, probably going to be like, 5 or 7,000 people in the street at a time,
Oh yeah.
but it's going to be, a 4 hour rotation of people.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, come and go as you please. Yeah. And what else is going on in the district? Anything noteworthy?
Well, we do have the Quincy Democratic City Committee barbecue at the Nickerson Post around 6 p.m. on the 20th of August. You do have homefront.org, sorry, Operation Homefront America. They're doing the cookout at Totoro Room on Sunday the 23rd from 1 to 5. We do have a Cantley Virgil for folks who have passed away from substance abuse on the 26th from 7 to 9 at the Hancock Adams Common. We once you get there, obviously you like to have a loved one's name recognized. Susan Martin does a great job with that. And just get there and maybe get there a little early to submit your name. I'll try to be at all these events, maybe not the whole time, but sometime.
Sure.
Some events, as you're there just to be part of an event, and you're not there to actually politics, so to speak.
Oh, right. No, I understand. Yeah. So, and then the primary is September 1st this year, so might as well call it August.
Yeah, might as well call it August. It's before Labor Day. I think we all expect a very low turnout. Your mail-in ballots are available if you apply for
Yes.
one. Get the clerk's office to get it to you really quick. I'm sorry to say I do not have the early voting day available for you right now. I'm sure you have that. Oh, we can bring that
August
later.
22nd is the first day of early voting
There you go. First day of early voting is August 22nd. So,
at City Hall.
yep. So there you go. So there's plenty of ways to vote. I'm planning to vote in person. I said this before last time. It would be one of my firsts in life, doing something different in my life. But you got to do it. You got to do these things. There's going to be a lot of firsts this year for me. But yeah, so there's plenty of ways to vote. If you're going to be away vacation, voting early and mail-in ballots can make sure that you exercise your constitutional right.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And how do we get a hold of you, Tacky?
617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. The phones are getting really quiet now that former sessions have closed for the moment. Although I expect people continue to send emails on things in conference committee. Everything else is more likely than not moving forward at this stage. Just assume it's going to be tough to get stuff done. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. Stay resident of Tacky Chan Facebook, with corresponding Instagram, tackychan.org. Hannah in my office told me I need to do some updates. We are taking stuff down because it's too old. Finding new pictures to put up. Yeah, there's gonna be a whole lot of things happening there. Because I was looking at it, I was like, wow, we really have to change this. We have MALegislature.gov, the state website. Again, you can watch the last days of session as well as look up bills, final result. It is near instantaneous the day of. So whatever happened the day of that session, the clerk's office will have near instantaneous updates. So if you call me, it won't be what be it won't be different from what you see on the website. So MALegislature.gov. What else am I missing?
Don't forget us.
Oh, that's right. We're here with Joe every week or 2 weeks. We're gonna have to synchronize our vacations, Joe.
Right.
And obviously QA TV at QATV.org, QATV at QATV.org. Please email Joe with the top of the matter as we move into the fall period. Obviously we can diversify our topic matters, given the fact we're kind of out of session at the moment, but still some activity. And of course, check with Joe every morning on his Quincy AM for the 10-minute update of local and national news.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks so much, Jackie.